Translation. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction, so that he ceases from all other activities. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. Could somebody switch off their phone, please? When the mind is materialistic or absorbed in material contact, it acts for material advancement of knowledge, destructively ending in discovery of nuclear weapons. But when the mind acts under spiritual urge, it acts wonderfully for going back home, back to Godhead, for life in complete bliss and eternity. Therefore, the mind has to be manipulated by good and unalloyed intelligence. Perfect intelligence is to render service unto the Lord. One should be intelligent enough to understand that the living being is, in all circumstances, a servant of the circumstances. Every living being is serving the dictates of desire, anger, lust, illusion, insanity, and enviousness, all materially affected. But even while executing such dictations of different temperaments, he is perpetually unhappy. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about it from the right sources, he gets information of the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Instead of serving materially for the above-mentioned different humors of the body, the living entity's intelligence then becomes freed from the unhappy illusion of materialistic temperament, and thus by unalloyed intelligence, the mind is brought into the service of the Lord. The Lord and his service are identical, being on the absolute plane. Therefore, the unalloyed intelligence and the mind are merged into the Lord, and thus the living entity does not remain a seer himself, but becomes seen by the Lord transcendentally. When the living entity is directly seen by the Lord dictates to him to act according to his desire. And when the living entity follows him perfectly, the living entity ceases to discharge any other duty for his illusory satisfaction. In his pure unalloyed state, the living being attains the stage of full bliss, labdho prashanti, and ceases all material hankerings. Om Agyan Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Vidamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Paramami Hari Priye Pancha Kapaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I'll read the translation again. We are on Canto 2, Chapter 2, Verse 16. This is all about the Lord in the heart. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction, so that he ceases from all other activities. So I believe I can speak until 8:30 and then take questions. So with your permission, I'd like to share some thoughts on this very beautiful, really, really beautiful verse, and actually Srila Prabhupada's beautiful treatment of this verse. Although this verse on the face of it looks like it's being discussed how a yogi merges with the super soul. The way Srila Prabhupada explains it through the eyes of bhakti is actually as our mind becomes purified. Because our mind is by nature in the mode of goodness. And as our mind by nature actually really can become a bhakti tirtha. What does that mean? A portal, a window, a bridge to our true self, to the spiritual world, to our relationship with Krishna. So when our mind is purified by our pure intelligence, our intelligence gets purified by spiritual knowledge. Then, you know, this pure mind, this pure intelligence, which is all for Krishna, gets immersed completely in our true self. And when we get immersed completely in our true self, we merge completely into Krishna. What does this mean? When we merge completely into Krishna and we feel fully satisfied and blissful. This word, labdho prashanti, has become my new favorite word, feeling completely blissful. What is being described here is the state of feeling completely and utterly in love with Krishna. Rasa, or feeling, is so powerful that it overrides space, it overrides time, and it overrides thought. This is this immersive experience of being in love with Krishna. When we are actually not just liking Krishna, not just attached to Krishna, but really living in love with Krishna and his associates. That feeling, that emotion, you know, the spiritual world is driven by rasa, it's driven by relationships, driven by feeling. It's so powerful, it's so immersive, and we love immersive experiences, don't we? We chase after immersive experiences. In this world, any feeling that is immersive, we try to relive it over and over again. Our music is designed like that. Our literature is designed like that. We set our lives up like that. You know, look at the most intense loving relationships. For example, parental love, especially when the baby is small. It's so immersive. Some people keep having baby after baby after baby just to relive that bit, because when the kids get older, you don't have that anymore. You know, look at conjugal love. The beginning stages of conjugal love, material conjugal love, is so immersive that people want to relive it over and over again, whether it's separation or union or missing, because this love, actual love, and especially spiritual love, which is ever increasing, which doesn't get interrupted, is multidimensional, because every emotion is included in love. Anger is included in love. Disgust is included in love. Envy is included in love. Even in transcendental love, if you read the second part of the Nectar of Devotion, all of these humors, all of these feelings, all of these emotions are there as part of ecstatic emotions, but they are under this all-encompassing emotion of spiritual love. So we love to be immersed. We have a very strong need to be loved. We have a very strong need to share this love, this immersive love, both transcendentally, which is ultimately, and also in our human experience. So as devotees, we are constantly trying to balance between our humanity and our purity. And the highest representation of this immersive love is Radhakund and Shyamkund, which it so happens to be the appearance of today. Described in the Adi Purana as born of the tears of love shed by Radha Hisham in separation, even though they're actually together. And This is in their Nitya Lila pastime, but also manifest in Bhumi Lila, following the killing of the Arishtasura demon. What happens in this particular pastime? These two kuns, Radhakund and Shyamkund, the embodiment of their love for each other, actually after Shyamkund is formed by Krishna inviting all of the holy rivers to reside there so he can purify himself, so he can be qualified to associate with Radharani, you know, because he's just killed a bull. So Radharani and the gopis, they're like, you know, you're contaminated. You need to purify yourself. But actually, with Radharani's endeavor, with her endeavors to please him through that particular relationship of chiding him for being impure, through that particular relationship of showing him, you know, I'm going to create my own kund as well. I don't want to bathe in your kund, which is now contaminated by your sin of killing a bull. Actually, that surrender, that love, Krishna's attraction to that immersion that Radharani has, that the gopis have in him, means that that bank which separates Radhakund and Shyamkund completely breaks, and the two kunds become one. That's immersion. This is what is so powerful about immersive love, is that when time, space, and thought are overridden, two people, us and Krishna, can be a million miles away. We can be universes away, and we feel like we are completely together. Even love in the material world, when there's that strong immersive experience, when there's that genuine love and care, and love and care means service, okay? There is no separation. Because even if you're not physically together, your prayers and your good wishes are always with each other. And the first line here, Prabhupada says, the functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. This love that Radhakund and Shyamkund embody, this completely immersive love, you know, which we have by nature. Because although we are born of Krishna, our bhakti and our devotion is born of Radharani. Right, the feminine. We have Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, and we have us as Prakriti. But we're scared of these feelings. Aren't we scared of this very same thing that we want to... Shrada Gokul Nanda Kija, Radha Damodara Kija, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Kija, Govinda Kija. We are scared of these feelings. Often we are scared of that which we want the most. Right? Fear often highlights for us what is most important. So when we fear this function of the mind of feeling, then we disconnect with a very important part of our human experience in our service. Because the whole function of feeling is, again, it's another way for Krishna to show us what our needs are, and also, most importantly, how to relate to each other. Sometimes it can be frightening about what comes up from the mind, and what comes up in our feelings is they can be very sudden, right? Especially in our community of Vaishnavas, we're relating to each other in so many different ways. And sometimes we've also related to each other in many other lifetimes in different forms. And sometimes those attachments come up completely by surprise. It's like, boom, wow, where did that come from? And we run. I think another way that feelings we are scared of showing is our fear of relating to female energy within us and female energy around us. And this isn't just for men, this is also for women. This is not a man-woman issue, really. This is about understanding what feminine nature means. If we actually look ultimately, you know, materially we look at feminine and masculine very much based on physical, biological, you know, XY chromosomes, physical attributes, etc. But actually, spiritually, there's Purusha, enjoyer, and Prakriti, enjoyed. What does enjoyed mean? Enjoyed means the ability to serve, the capacity to serve, the potential to serve. Okay? And this potential to serve is born of Ras. It's born of feeling, ultimately. But it manifests here. So really, actually, mind control, when we think about mind control, we often think, okay, it means I can control my thoughts and it means I can control my senses. But mastery of the mind also means that we have mastery of our feelings and emotions. What does this mean? When we have mastery of our feelings and emotions, they don't frighten us. They are regulated. They come about at the appropriate time and in the appropriate circumstance, and they are readable. It doesn't matter whether it's anxiety, whether it's sadness, whether it's fear, envy, or whether it's affection. They don't frighten us, because actually, ultimately, everything begins and ends. And so we feel comfortable. We can swim in it, have a good look around. Can I use this in Krishna's service? How can I use this in Krishna's service? Or is this something that's unhelpful? And if it's unhelpful, how do I transform it? How do I purify it? Krishna is very kind. He gives us, he recognizes that although we are born of him and our bhakti is born of Radharani, and we have this innate desire, nature, to give and receive love. When we come here, even though we choose to come here, he gives us many anchors and he gives us many frameworks within which we can safely love each other, serve each other, and experience each other's love and service. Okay, think about it. When we first come into this world, what is the first thing any of us is ascribed? Our gender. First, it's the first thing. The first thing anyone tells us we are is a boy or girl. Okay, then our personality develops. Then our sexuality develops. And then we have our occupation or varna. What am I going to do in this world? And then as we progress, lifestyle. So, I've got something on the other side of this board. I do wonder sometimes we should get lapel mics for class. Now, I promised myself today is not going to turn into a battle of the sexes, because whenever people talk about masculine and feminine, we tend to get into politics, or we tend to get into Shastra gymnastics, right? But actually, let's look at this in terms of relationships and the psychology of relationships. And if you can't hear me, I'm sorry. I don't know how I'm going to keep my mic close to me, but forgive me, those of you listening online. Right, so what have I got here in front of us? So Krishna's really kind. He gives us these frameworks. He gives us modes of material nature to help us understand how to engage our senses. Okay? He gives us varna to help us to engage our psychosocial physical nature. And you can do, but then it might block the board. I'll see. Let's see how it goes. But we also have ashram. What does ashram mean? Ashram is actually, the root word of ashram is ashraya, right? Shelter. Although ashram is lifestyle, it's a lifestyle that gives you protection. Okay, so we have our four, and I know most of you know this, but there's some new people listening, so I just want to go through it. So we have our four ashrams, brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Okay, and we have our four occupations, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Okay, just a quick recap. Brahmins, B, always thinking about what is the best thing to do. Okay, Kshatriya, K, figuring out, I want to know how to do this, right? If you're a Kshatriya, you're always trying to figure out, how do we do that? How do we achieve the best thing to do? Vaishya, V, they're constantly resourcing, valuables. How do I get the valuables, the resources to execute the best thing to do? Shudra, S, showtime. Okay, showtime means tell us what to do. We'll make it happen. Really, really valuable varna. Okay, so varna, what am I going to do? Okay, in learning how to give and receive love, in offering my service, how am I going to do it? And then we have these four stages. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in a really wonderful class, Canto 1, Chapter 8, verse 40-41, he gives a wonderful class about really how these two things are supposed to work together. So ashram, ashraya, lifestyle, protective lifestyle. So all it is, not career move, it's a lifestyle choice. Brahmacharya, you are training under the spiritual master, under the temple, learning what to do, what not to do, learning how to regulate yourself. Okay, then we move to grahastha life. Grahastha life, one is learning to and really learning detachment through live by what we need and everything else for Krishna. And even what we need is offered to Krishna first. Okay? So there's again a natural renunciation there. Vanaprastha, as you start to move away from maintenance and you start to live in such a way that you're more and more really starting to see how can I live with as little as possible and mostly living in love with Krishna. And then we have sannyas. So these are sannyasis, is, you know, no real fixed place, no real fixed place of residence, and Krishna is my shelter. So the reason I put ticks here is Srila Prabhupada's very clear in this purport about how these four varnas and ashrams relate to each other. And he's very clear also of two things, that being a Vaishnav is actually transcendental to this, and also Guru Tattva is independent and transcendental to this. But he says we never claim position of Vaishnav. So because we don't claim the position of Vaishnav, we use this framework. Okay, when we use a framework to climb to the top, anybody here has used a climb frame, we're independent of that framework, right? You're using the framework. But when we don't understand the framework, we get trapped. When you misuse the framework, we get trapped. So what he explains is, actually for the Brahmins, all four ashrams are available. Okay, progressively. He really talks about progress, that going through these four is progressive. It's not fall down. It's progressive. Okay? For the Kshatriya, Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, no sannyas. For the Vaishya, Brahmacharya and Grahastha only, no Vanaprastha or sannyas. And for the Shudra, only Grahastha life, no Brahmacharya. Okay, why did I go through these? Because the key to successful ashram, okay, even more so, because we're getting better at the whole Varna thing, we're getting better at recognizing what our nature is, what work we should offer. But what we're still missing a beat with, actually a lot of beats with, is the relationship within ashrams and the relationship between ashrams. And honestly, I think a lot of that is related to how we view feminine energy. Again, within ourselves and within women. Okay, so two things here I want to highlight is that Varnashram, and especially ashram, is progressive and it's protective. Each of these ashrams protects us. Each of the relationships in these ashrams protects us from being distracted by those things that will take us away from our sadhana. Those things that will take us away from connecting with Krishna. Those things that will take us away from serving each other with love and compassion. And then the way these four ashrams relate to each other is also protective. Now, the problem is how we relate to each other is very much to do with our attachment style. So this is where I get into my little psychological thing here. So has anybody heard of attachment theory? So attachment theory basically says that when we have secure attachments, okay, what does secure attachment mean? Secure attachment means that I trust that whatever I need, whatever protection I need, whatever care I need is available through many sources. Doesn't matter which ashram or, you know, which varna you're in, okay, or how old you are. You have this secure attachment, and particularly you have that with Krishna. Secure attachment. I know Krishna's there, okay? I know Krishna's got my back. And what does this then mean? Okay, when we have secure attachment, it means that it's very easy for us to tolerate distress. It's very easy for us to forgive. This is actually Shastric, and this is also in tune with psychological research and studies. So those with secure attachment have low level of personal distress and high levels of concern for others. Excellent conflict resolution, mentally flexible, effective communicators, avoidance of manipulation, comfortable with closeness without fearfulness of being enmeshed, quickly forgiving, believing that they can positively impact their relationships, and care for others in the way that they want to be cared for. Okay, this is secure attachment. Secure attachment leads to love and service without fear, both in this world and within. The other side is insecure or avoidant attachment, where we don't trust that someone's going to be there for us in this world and even beyond. We don't even trust whether Krishna's going to be there. Because if our internal dialogue is that no one here is there for me, and even if they're there for me, oh my God, they're going to cause my fall down, then what's going to happen? We're going to want to avoid, right? So this is what happens when we frame anyone or anything as Maya. When we frame anyone or anything as Maya, we have two options to relate to that thing or person. Either enjoy or exploit, or fear and avoid. This is insecure attachment. This is what leads to bhoga tyag. What's bhoga? Enjoy, isn't it? Exploit. Tyag is, it's fear and avoidance, not renunciation. Avoidance is not renunciation. So this is the most unhealthy attachment style. We tend to have it with things and people that we want and really need, but we don't know how to relate. Okay. So, and, you know, I want us to try and understand the importance of this secure attachment. The importance of the secure attachment is that there's appreciation there. It is much easier to let go of something and someone you love than it is to let go of something or someone you fear and avoid. Isn't it? When you fear or avoid something or someone, female to male, male to female, you end up having very skewed relationships. Okay, what ends up happening is you have your training, okay, and then you try and enter relationships and you try and enter grahastha ashram, not seeing it as progressive, not seeing it as an opportunity to serve, but seeing it as a distraction, a fall down. Now, imagine that. You're graduating, but you see you're graduating as failure. Can you imagine going to university and thinking you're failing by going to university? Are you going to engage with it properly? No, you're not going to engage with it properly, right? If you're in celibate student life and you think that the people around you are there to make you fall down, are there to either enjoy, exploit, or fear and avoid, then how will we engage with them in a mood of service? So what we end up having is a lot of subtle problems in all of our ashrams. We end up having annihilation of this feminine. We end up having annihilation of feeling. We end up having annihilation of service, right? So this secure attachment, when you love someone, it's easy to let them go. This is why parents who love their kids can let them go. But this is why even here, if we look at these four, we look at these four progressive ashrams, if there's real, genuine love, care, and service, then actually renunciation in the later stages happens easily because no separation is felt, right? Otherwise, if we don't have secure attachment, if we keep doing this whole bhogatyag thing, I know couples who are of that generation where we were told, you know, okay, well, if you can't control your senses, just get married. and you can't. How does that leave someone feeling if you're female? You see yourself as, okay, I caused this person's fall down, you know? And then a man's entering a relationship thinking, okay, I'm married now, and I'm just going to be, you know, it's called grahastha guilt, you know? I'm married, but this is a fall down. And how are you going to use anything for service if you think it's caused you to be separated from Krishna? Okay, so you end up having marriages where there's artificial renunciation. Actually, where there's secure attachment. Imagine this. We would have powerful Brahmin couples who are literally setting the planet on fire with their preaching. Okay, you'll have powerful Kshatriya couples who are running our temples and our projects, not with other people's husbands and wives, but together in such a Krishna conscious way. Right, that there's no distraction and everything's flourishing, just like in the time of Ram and Sita. If we have powerful Vaishya couples, we'll be needing nothing. We'll be needing nothing. We won't have to look outside to get our resources. And same, powerful Shudra couples, they won't be riddled with guilt that, oh, I'm just a Shudra, you know, I've got nothing to offer, I'm not a Brahmin. They will work together to make sure all of our projects are completed. So this secure attachment really, for us, allows us to move from a position of this is Maya, I have to fear and avoid it, we have to enjoy it, to then shifting it to Mahamaya. We transform the Maya. This is what secure attachment does. When we have appreciation for the feminine within us and the feminine around us, then actually we can offer everything in service to Krishna. Now, I'm conscious of time. I'm just sitting here thinking, my God, there's so much more to talk about on this. But I just want to say one last point about the impact, this annihilation of killing off this ability to feel, killing off the feminine within us, and killing off the feminine around us does. Okay, because we need this feminine energy, because we are this feminine energy by nature. We are designed to serve. But when we do this, when we kill off the feminine, when we kill it off for ourselves as well, we have women who are falsely renouncing, women who are trying to be like men in order to be psychologically healthy. Okay? We've got grahasthas who are artificially living in separation within their own households, almost like hating each other, like they're the cause of each other's downfall. The kids grow up watching this, right? And then the kids grow up watching this, girls grow up watching this, thinking, huh, I've got to be like a man to be able to serve. Okay? Or they just, you know, maybe they don't even want to be devotees anymore. Boys grow up looking at it, thinking, okay, this is how my father and mother treat each other. Where can I see healthy role models? Right, so they may want to even demasculinate themselves and give up this ability to discriminate and be strong protectors. Right? So, and then furthermore, generationally, and we see it a lot now, if we're hating feminine, if we're avoiding feminine, fearing it or exploiting it, then we are also, and if you keep up to date with what's going on, there is a whole new problem in society. Everybody's becoming gender fluid and everybody's becoming sexually fluid. Why? Because they're trying to seek balance by becoming impersonal and annihilating. The very things that Krishna gives us as anchors, we're trying to destroy. Okay. Furthermore, if that doesn't happen, then if we want to find healthy role models, I see so many couples looking outside. They renounce ISKCON in order to have healthy relationships. You renounce ISKCON, you end up renouncing Prabhupada. That's not helpful. You know, so this, you know, if we value and appreciate every varna, if we value and appreciate every gender, if we value and appreciate every ashram as a protective lifestyle choice, that the people around me are there to protect me from the many, many, many things and attachments my mind, which thinks, feels, and wills, which has sanskars, which has experiences from so many lifetimes where somebody could mean absolutely nothing to you one day, and the next day it's like some attachment pops up. It's like, oh my God, that is so strong. What am I going to do with this in this lifetime? Find a healthy outlet. Find the right ashram. Find the right varna. Find the right way to communicate. Because, you know, when we have healthy ashram, we've got really wonderful brahmacharis and brahmacharinis who are able to focus on their training, who are able to focus on their renunciation internally and externally, who feel looked after by the healthy grahastha ashram, who feel mothered by the mothers and fathered by the fathers. Okay, they're not distracted. Okay, they get protection from the other ashrams and from within their ashram, rather than this pogatyag, pogatyag, pogatyag. Grahastha ashram, progressively, you naturally, through the experience of giving love and receiving love, I mean, it's amazing. You're so excited to be together, serve together, so enthusiastic. It's like having an ashram, it's like having a temple in your own home. Okay? And you naturally start to detach. Why do you naturally detach? Because you're all helping each other to love Krishna more and more and more. You become each other's, not Maya, you become each other's yoga Maya. Okay? You become each other's guru, each other's friend, each other's everything. And then, naturally then, vanaprastha comes easy. Because your joy, as Prabhupada says here, you know, his last sentence, what does he say? The living entity ceases to discharge any other duty for his illusory satisfaction. So any duty, every duty, loving and serving others, whatever work you're doing, whether your retired life, is actually for the pleasure of Krishna. Because we're completely immersed in him. Okay, so becoming a Vaishnava becomes very, very easy. And these just become our friends. Then we can be anything to anyone at any time, and we can be everything also that we need to be, because Krishna will work through us. So this imbalance we have of masculine and feminine, I do sometimes wonder, what on earth are you guys scared of? Seriously, what is the worst that could happen if there's genuine appreciation between males and females? You know? So please, my invitation is that we try to view each other in a more healthy, holistic way. Because then the politics will sort itself out, you know. Then the issues that we have with inequalities will sort themselves out. The issues of fall down will sort themselves out. The issues of gender fluidity and sexual fluidity will sort themselves out. And we will all be able to use Krishna's beautiful frameworks to really actually go back to Godhead within this lifetime. Because actually, we are all Prakriti. We're all Prakriti. We all love to be enjoyed by Krishna by serving him. Okay, so if we're going to actually run after anyone, run after him. And don't let your body stop you. Okay, so don't let your own body become your Maya either. Okay, and boys, you know, and girls, we all have feminine and masculine within us. Don't deny your femininity, your ability to nurture, your ability to feel, your ability to connect. At the same time, you can also cultivate the masculine to be cerebral and protective and strong and discriminate. Anyway, I've gone 7 minutes over time, and I'm keeping you all from breakfast, but I'm sure some of you have got corrections, complaints, maybe some, hopefully some helpful comments. And please forgive me if I've been strong or if I've offended anybody. I just felt like, you know, this pastime of Radhakund and Shankun is so beautiful, and we all really, really, really want this wonderful, immersive, loving experience with Krishna. But if we can't let go and love someone here fully, how are we going to let ourselves do that? When Krishna's, you know, clearly saying here that the mind first has to be able to, that thinking, feeling, and willing has to be surrendered to him. We can't do it for another person. How will we do it for Krishna? Thank you very much. Anybody? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thanks for the interesting class. Just a comment. What you've actually, seems to me you've actually touched on a lot, and we don't have time to discuss it.
I thought I had an hour yet, not 35 minutes.
It might be an idea, you know, have almost like this to go to, or something like an event or something where we can actually, devotees can get together and actually get into some of this stuff and some of the misunderstandings and try and actually get some progress in some of the stuff that you're touching on, because it's kind of like you've started something, but we have to stop now, and it's kind of like, that's just what I wanted to say.
I hope we've started something helpful. Did you want to?
Thank you very much for the class. It's very, very informative and such an important topic to look at. I'm quite interested in what you're talking about with like gender fluidity and sexual fluidity. I know a lot of people who are gender fluid and sexually fluid, and my experience here is so important, but I don't know how I'm supposed to relate to them if the very thing that's touched me is doesn't accept them. How are they supposed to come into this environment or even be around me?
Who says Krishna doesn't accept it? Look at the demigods, look at Bhagavatam. There are plenty of stories of gender fluidity. Okay, Arjun lives as a woman for a whole year. So Krishna's not really interested in what body we have or how we assign ourselves or who we choose to love. What he's interested in is how we choose to love people and how we put him in the center. That is all he's interested in. We've had 8.4 million different types of bodies. That's a lot of different types of bodies. And we can't even imagine half of them, more than half. So if Krishna consciousness has touched you, then, and if Krishna's really touched your heart in his beautiful, unconditionally and accepting way, then share that love with others. Because actually, if they really read the books and don't, you know, take one verse and forget 699 other verses from the Bhagavad Gita, or take one verse from the Bhagavatam and forget all of the 17,999, then they'll find him, regardless of what their strengths and challenges in this world are. They'll find their place, you know. And this is fluid. This is progressive, protective, but it's fluid. It changes. You know, so, don't be scared. We've got to be Krishna confident because everything is there.
Yeah? Thank you.
I feel like no people are a bit scared to say anything.
Thank you very much for your lecture. What I want to ask you is, can you just sum up in a minute what you perceive to be a summary of Krishna consciousness?
Wow. A summary of Krishna consciousness. A summary of Krishna consciousness is to become conscious through thought, feeling, and willing, and through our actions, of the person who loves us most, which is Krishna.
Thank you.
Thank you. Krishna.
Sorry, you wanted to speak? Srinivas. Interesting class. I came because I wanted to hear your class.
And you came to help me, so thank you.
Now we could say that I was driven by a feeling of ashakti, you know, because we know the stage of ashakti before bhava, prema. It's not really only between us and Krishna. No. It's also amongst devotees. Now, I work with a lot of women, and there is that Shakti there. You know, they love me, I love them, but it's very interesting what you said, because the even though Shakti means attachment, which is a form of love, but it's something interesting you pointed out. That attachment is, it has to be without attachment,
mm-hmm.
without the emotional, because, you know, we have to learn how to be devotional rather than.
But devotion means emotion.
Yeah, it is an emotion, but Ramakrishna Maharaj used to always tell me, try to perform devotional service, not emotional. Because sometimes, you know, if you feel some different attachment, like, you know, trying to overload or enjoy a person, that could become a wrong emotional feeling, isn't it? So therefore, we have to be detached from that. We have to be diligent to discern from pure ashakti, you know, appreciation, like you said.
Yes.
Rather than becoming too intimate.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that theory, you know, of attachment, but without being attached. You know, to a woman.
Which is service, isn't it?
It is. That's something that our society has failed in so many ways. You know, I mean, I don't even want to go there, but, you know, just because there was anyways, but I'll tell you privately this. But, yeah, it's interesting, you know, to go deep, you know, in our relationship, and they have to be motivated by pure love. You know, pure love means appreciation without getting, you know, this emotional stuff involved, like lust, anger, you know, and all this, which pollutes the ashakti, you know, the relationship. Pollutes the appreciation that we have for a person. But I do believe that there is a pure liking and pure love for another person, even though we don't know that person very well, but we like the way the person speaks, we like the way he or she carries herself, you know, in relationships, or we like, you know, what they do. And there is nothing wrong to deny, you know, like we say, oh, I love the way he speaks. We use the word I love. But it doesn't mean, you know, that you love that person, you know, in a wrong way. So we are afraid sometimes, you know, of disclosing that appreciation. And then we become, you know, deniers, like you said. But
even those other emotions like fear, anger, envy, lust, fearing them doesn't mean, you know, or understanding the risk or danger of something doesn't mean you avoid it. Actually, if you understand risk, you manage it much better. In my work, right, I manage suicide risk all the time. To anybody else, having a conversation about suicide is like, oh my God, that's the most difficult conversation. When you understand it, it becomes a safe conversation. Okay, so fear, lust, anger, greed, envy are very scary if you don't spend time really looking at it in yourself. When we understand it, it is simply a perverted reflection of all of the love that we have. And then when we can appreciate that, we can transform those emotions. So yes, we engage in devotional service, not emotional service, but devotional service is pure emotional service. Does that make sense? I know you know all this. I'm just trying to articulate it.
So. I was brought up in a Franciscan monastery, and the theory was always learn to love what you. That was Saint Francis. One should learn to love what he sees before he learns to love what he doesn't see. You know, we try to develop a relationship with God, to love God. And then, you know, we are very impersonal towards all the all the things that we see around us. So I think, you know, first the t-shirt and then the jumper and then the jacket. First, you know, we have to learn how to love each other.
Yeah.
That's why the material world is a test. And then we can learn to love what we don't see, because we don't see God at the moment.
Absolutely.
Hari Hari.
Thank you. I think there's one more here. I don't know how much longer we're allowed to go on. Keep going. There's no breakfast. Did you say there's no breakfast? Okay, okay, fine. Okay.
I just wanted to ask another question quickly.
So what's your name?
It's Abby. Abby.
Abby.
How are we supposed to learn to love each other when we're also taught, you know, like, you know, the females are taught that we're not supposed to look at the men. You know, mm-hmm. we can't, like, give eye contact or, you know, we cover our heads, we wear saris, you know, we have to be very modest, and, which I love doing. I love doing all that. But I find it difficult to connect with someone when I'm not allowed to talk to them or look at them.
Because of our conditioning and the way we're raised in the West, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So just coming back to this Brahmacharini ashram, it's a training ground, right? And it's a training ground for us to learn to control our senses, get a better understanding of ourselves. Because when you're in the quiet alone of the temple, you see yourself. You see your distractions, you see your strengths, you see your vulnerabilities. When we recognize what power we have, then we are careful with that power, right? Anybody who's ever cooked in a kitchen with small children around, you have a big knife, do you wave it around like this with the small children? No, you're careful, right? So the reason for lack of or avoiding eye contact or not speaking to each other too much is, I guess, training's like rehab. You know, for somebody to be rehabilitated from drinking alcohol, they got to stay away from it for a little while. And rather than getting offended by it as Vaishnavis, that, oh, why aren't you looking at me and why aren't you talking to me to my face? Kind of respect for that. Okay, I have something, I'm carrying something, which could make you feel, you know, a little bit wobbly. So I will, for your safety, manage my Shakti. For the other side, the way to, and you know, this isn't just about, you know, because it's not always about the men, it's also women to women, you know. The other person on their side is kind of thinking, okay, now am I avoiding eye contact out of fear or exploitation? Or just, it's just simple respect. Because actually, when we have respect and love for each other, eye contact is not an issue at all, you know. You can make eye contact, there's very respectful exchange, and it's absolutely fine, but everybody's at different stages. So I think we can also protect ourselves. We don't, as women, we don't have to annihilate ourselves. We can just understand our strength and how to use those strengths. Feeling is our strength. We use it as mothers all the time. Kids can't talk when they're small. The fact that we can feel our way around looking after them is a real power. Right? And men also, when they become fathers, they draw on their feminine energy. And where it's off balance, they struggle as fathers. So yeah, it's rather than taking behavior at a superficial level, we try and understand what's behind that behavior.
Thank okay. you. Lovely answer.
That's it. Hare Krishna. It's breakfast time. Thank you so much for your time.